The United States Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit is now open and in session. God save the United States and this honorable court.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. We have five cases on the calendar this morning. Three consolidated cases from the PTAB, patent case from the ITC, and a case from the Court of Federal Claims that has been submitted in the briefs and not argued. The consolidated cases are C.R. Baud versus Medline Industries, 2020-1900, 1908, 1910. Mr. Matsui, please proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the Court. Brian Matsui for C.R. Baud. I would like to primarily address two issues. First, the Board's error with respect to the requirement that two syringes be stored in one compartment and a medical assembly in another compartment. While that error runs through all three patents, it is enough to reverse or vacate the Board's decision for all the claims from Claim 45 and higher that are addressed in the 088 patent appeal. Second, I would like to address the requirement in Claim 7 of the 596 patent that the drainage bag be positioned between the tray bottom and the catheter. This error adds Claim 7, 8, and 13 that should be reversed or at least vacated in the 596 patent appeal. With any time remaining, I'll address the other issues. The Board's errors there largely flow from or are related to the kinds of errors the Board made in the two issues that I want to focus on. So starting with the two syringes in one compartment requirement, the Board committed a simple legal error in how it applied obviousness. This is a simple requirement. It just requires two syringes in one compartment and a medical assembly in another compartment. The Board found that the prior art disclosed all the elements in the claim tray: syringes, a Foley catheter, sterile materials, multi-compartment single-layer trays. But the Board imposed anticipation-like requirements in the obviousness analysis. It required that a single reference expressly disclose two syringes in one compartment, and it dismissed each reference one by one while ignoring combinations and the creativity of a person of ordinary skill in the art. If we look at the 088 appendix, pages 44 to 47, in four pages there, the Board individually dismisses Salazzo, Serrani, and Distin for not expressly describing or describing two syringes in a compartment, and it does so about 10 times in those four pages. Now, setting aside that another reference... Yes,
Mr. Matsui, you're saying that it's fairly obvious within the skill of person of ordinary skill to add a second item of the same nature as the first item in a kit of this sort?
Certainly, Your Honor. I mean, for over 60 years, there have been single-layer trays with these types of items, and we have the MI reference that shows multiple syringes in a single compartment. We have Serrani, which shows in single-layer trays, cleaning bowls stored together. And it was well within the capabilities of a person of ordinary skill in the art to move syringes from one tray to another. I think an important fact here is that Salazzo itself discloses two syringes. It specifies that one of those syringes, an inflation syringe, is in compartment 27, and the medical assembly is in compartment 3. But for that second syringe, which is an irrigation syringe, it doesn't specify what compartment that syringe is in. And there just aren't very many places that you could put that second syringe. As our expert explained, it was really compartment 3 or compartment 27. So you're really dealing with a finite number of predictable choices of where you could put that second syringe. It was really only going to be in one of those two compartments. But as I mentioned...
What kind of deference do we owe the PTAB? They did a fairly thorough job, didn't they?
Well, this is a legal error, Your Honor. So this is reviewed de novo because the Board, when you look at those pages from Appendix 44 to 47, it was just analyzing each reference one by one and faulting them for Salazzo not expressly describing two syringes in one compartment or Serrani only describing a single syringe. That's a legal error, what the board did there with respect to the obviousness analysis. But even if the court were to sort of look at this as a factual issue, which I don't think it should because of the requirement of express disclosures, there certainly isn't any substantial evidence to support the board's decision that a person of ordinary skill in the art could not put two syringes in one compartment, particularly because really the question here is just where do you put Sollozzo's second syringe? Because Sollozzo describes that there are two syringes in it. You have both an irrigation syringe and an inflation syringe, and that irrigation syringe has to go somewhere in the tray. So really there are only a couple options where you could put it.
You think the board was essentially examining for anticipation, not obviousness?
It really seems that way, that it was looking for, at least with respect to, you know, these sort of claim requirements, it was looking for anticipation-like references because it just examined each reference one by one. And then the only fault it really gave at all was that the reference itself did not describe or expressly describe two syringes in one compartment. And that's why that really makes this case, you know, like almost like a KSR, where you didn't have prior art that, you know, separately disclosed electronic sensors, pedals with fixed pivot points. No single prior art reference disclosed that, but the claimed arrangement was obvious. And that's what the Supreme Court has said. That's what this court has said on numerous occasions.
Mr. Matsui, this is Chen. For this category of claims dealing with two syringes in one compartment, medical assembly in a second compartment, I believe there is at least one of the claims in this category that talks about specifically an inflation syringe and a lubrication syringe. Is that right?
There's with respect to like claim 45 and higher, it's really talking about just two syringes in one compartment. But
it's true for the 088 patent. I'm talking about one of the other two patents in this consolidated set of appeals, or this combined set of appeals.
Yes, Your Honor.
Claim 7 of the 596 patent, I think, is the inflation and lubrication syringe, correct?
That's correct. And there's no dispute, though,
So, I understand, your theory of obviousness for Claim 7 of the 596 patent would be that it would be obvious, or a skilled artisan would be motivated to have three syringes in compartment 27 of Sollozzo?
I mean, certainly that is. I mean, just to take this, your question in steps, I mean, it would have been obvious to replace a lubrication syringe for the lubrication tube. That's basically undisputed. And the board and the 400 IPR agreed that it would have been obvious to place lubricant in a syringe and to substitute the lubricant syringe for a lubricant tube. But yes, I mean, MI teaches that you can put three syringes in a single compartment. So it would have been obvious, and certainly within the skill of a person of ordinary skill in the art, to put all three syringes in compartment 27. There's nothing that would dissuade a person from ordinary skill in the art from doing that, and it certainly was within their level of skill. And you had references like MI, which had the multiple syringes, three syringes, in fact, in one compartment. You have Serrani, which shows storing like materials together. Persons of ordinary skill in the art, as both Distin and Serrani show, would want to put things, you know, in an order that would be useful, so they could easily move the syringes around to find a good way for them to be used. But then looking at Claim 7, the other requirement in Claim 7 in the 596 patent that I'd like to talk about, which is the drainage bag positioned between the Foley catheter and the tray bottom, which affects Claim 7, 8, and 13 of the 596 patent. The board made two errors there. And the first is that it repeated its express disclosure requirement. It effectively required a picture specifically showing the drainage bag between the tray bottom and the catheter. And we're in the 596 patent, which is the 1910 appeal. And if we look at Appendix 20 of the board's decision, they say Serrani simply fails to expressly describe or illustrate a fluid receptacle that is wholly located between the bottom of the container and the catheter. In Appendix 19, it says, Without such an express description, we agree with Dr. Singh that Cerini illustrates at least a portion of the fluid receptacle being located above the catheter, not between the catheter and the bottom of the container. And then
let me ask you, is it your view that arranging known items used for the known usual purpose differently is within the skill of the art?
Yes, Your Honor. And I don't think that there's any dispute that you could move these items in different containers within the single layer tray. I mean, the board found that in the 400 IPR, which Medline didn't appeal, that you could move various items and there would be motivation to combine references like Cerini and Sollozzo together. So I don't think that there can be any dispute here that it was within the level of ordinary skill in the art in this very simple field to be able to arrange items in different ways. And then you have prior art references like Cerini and Distin, which basically provide motivation for persons of ordinary skill in the art to do so in ways that would be convenient for the user.
This is Judge Bryson. I wonder if I could turn your attention, if you were done with that discussion, either complete your thought on that or turn to Claim 1 of the 088, and in particular, if you would address the limitation requiring the first compartment base member defining a mnemonic device indicating which of the devices is to be used first.
Yes, Your Honor. So with respect to the syringes at different heights requirement of the mnemonic device requirement, all that's required with respect to that claim requirement is some sort of base structure that would basically, indicate a different height requirement. So that would indicate to the user which syringe basically to use first. And
so, let me ask
sorry.
You a follow-up question then with respect to that assertion. Do you think that if one syringe is slightly higher than the other, but they are at opposite ends of a large chamber, that is enough by virtue of their slight difference in height to establish the mnemonic device limitation?
I think so, because these are very broadly written claims. But I don't think that the court has to go so far where you say it's a very slight level of height. You have Sollozzo, which has a terraced bottom. The board found that it has a terraced bottom with a high area and a low area, and has the lubricant at a higher level than it has the inflation syringe. And given that terraced bottom, a person of ordinary skill in the art would understand that that you have the different height requirement here that's required by these claims. Now, some of the claims require...
Different height requirement is required by a number of claims, but the mnemonic device requirement is, as far as I can tell, only in two of the independent claims, including Claim 1 of the 088. And so what I'm trying to see here is whether your argument is that as long as there is a difference in height, that satisfies the mnemonic device requirement, and in particular, the requirement that the compartment base member defines such a mnemonic device. In your view, is height difference enough?
So I think to sort of take apart that question, Your Honor, the base member in Sollozzo is terraced. And so in that sense, it is having a mnemonic device. And the height requirement comes from the fact that the patent itself says that having things at different heights is a mnemonic device. It has for example, a stair-stepped base member.
Atui, I realize that Sollozzo itself describes the floor of the tray as a terraced arrangement, but in reality, I think we can all agree it's a sloped floor to the tray, right? And the board then made a fact finding that any syringe that's placed on the sloped portion of the floor would roll down to the bottom, to the flat bottom section of the tray. Is that right?
I mean, yes, if you took all the items out, the board was saying that the items might fall down to the bottom. But that's part of the problem, because the board there imposed additional claim requirements in its analysis, because it basically required that the syringes be held in place without anything else helping them to stay in place. It required a specific contour and shape for the syringes to be held. But nothing in the claims require that. All that requires is a base member that has the mnemonic device, which we have as the terrace bottom, or in the claims that just require, some claims don't require the mnemonic device, and the claims that just require different heights, it just requires them to be at different, supported at different heights. And nothing in that claim language would require that it's the base alone that has to support the syringes at different heights, or that the base alone has to provide that height requirement. And so it was only by the board's
I guess
decision.
If you look at claim 25, it recites that the first compartment itself is supporting the first and second syringe at different heights, according
yes, and
to the predetermined steps of the catheterization procedure. So I guess what I'm looking at there is, why was it wrong-headed of the board to understand that this limitation is calling for something about the design of the compartment itself that supports these syringes at different height levels?
Well, the base of the tray is still supporting the syringe, even if it is resting on other items. It's just like I'm sitting on a chair right now, but the floor is still supporting me, even though I'm sitting on a chair. That the issue here is just whether or not, with this broad claim language, whether the syringe is being supported by the tray, and it is, even if there are other items that are helping it maintain that different height. And we have in here, as I mentioned, a terrace bottom. So we have a tray bottom shape that that would basically lead to those syringes to be stored at different heights. And there's just nothing in the claims that require that it be supported by the tray bottom alone, or that it have that specific shape or contour which the board required. And just, you know, an additional point I'll make, Your Honor, is that we were never given any notice that the board was going to impose these requirements upon us until the final written decision. So at the very least, we should get a remand.
In the patent owner's response at JA542, didn't the patent owner make this very argument that Salazzo's sloping floor can't possibly support a syringe located there because it'll just roll down to the bottom?
Your Honor, but they never asked for any sort of specific claim construction with respect to this requirement. It was only in the final decision that you started to get language like the contour and shape.
The point is that wasn't that enough notice to you that clearly the patent owner was arguing inside of that argument against Salazzo, was the patent owner was contemplating a specific conception of this different height limitation and what's required of the design of the tray to create and establish different height arrangements to support the syringes.
I think that just was not specific enough to give us the notice that would be required when, particularly, had we known that the board was going to impose these requirements, we could have shown that you could have different height requirements, like Sereni, where it shows the forceps are stored above the cleaning balls. And so I don't think that that's a situation that's fair to the petitioner to have, or to a party to have a claim construction effectively imposed on us in the final written decision. And it makes it like those the other cases where this court has remanded.
Since we're beginning to run out of time, I would like for you to address, if you would, claims 10 and 15 of the 761 patent, and in particular, the limitations requiring that the first compartment lubricating jelly chamber lubricate as the catheter passes from one chamber to the next. I don't see that limitation being suggested by anything in the prior art references other than that little notch in Salazzo's divider. Do you rely entirely on that little notch?
I mean, yes, the notch is what shows that you can have the pass-through limitation made as you go from one compartment to the other. And Medline itself really doesn't make any arguments with respect to this limitation other than to say that you couldn't or wouldn't put lubricant into the compartment 27 of Salazzo. So that's basically
the idea, since the limitation requires that it be lubricated as the catheter passes from one to the other. Is the idea that you would put lubrication on the edge of the notch? Is that the concept that you have in mind?
No, it's that as you would pass the catheter through, then it would basically have the lubrication that would go from the one compartment to the other.
Mr. Matsui, would you regard that as a use limitation? And this is an article of manufacture. It's not a method claim. Would you regard that lubrication as not lending patentable significance to this claim?
Yes, Your Honor, because all that is required here are the structures, and we have the necessary structures disclosed in the prior art. If there are no other questions, then I'd like to reserve my time for a rebuttal.
We will do that. Mr. Hoover.
Yes, Your Honor. Preliminary question, is my am I audible enough?
Enough.
Yes. Okay, well, Your Honors, thank you very much. Good morning, and may it please the Court. Alan Hoover for Medline. The challenger in this case, Bard, in its briefing and at the PTAB, has ignored a number of fundamental issues with their patent challenge. One question that must be asked in an obviousness analysis is, was there a need in the art? And did the patent owner or the patentee solve that need? Or attempt to solve that need
Mr. Hoover, I don't know that that's the first question in an obviousness analysis. Isn't this a KSR case where we've got an article of manufacture consisting of all known materials used for their well-known purposes, arranged in various ways, and the only distinguishing features seem to be the shape of the container and perhaps a use aspect to some of the claims?
I think the claims here are directed towards a product or method where the components are known in the art but are arranged and provided in a new way.
Did you say a product or method? I thought they were all apparatus claims.
I believe they're all apparatus claims in the challenge claims for this appeal. Yes, Your Honor.
All right.
So looking at the Salazzo reference, the problem to be addressed is the Cauti problem, catheter-associated urinary tract infection. And we asked the experts for Bard and the expert for Medline, both testified that the Salazzo problem or the Salazzo reference would not be useful in solving the Cauti problem. Bard has not rebutted that in its briefing before the court. But both parties' experts have agreed that that was the case, that Salazzo reference would not be useful in solving the Cauti problem. I'm not sure how the obviousness challenge that Bard raises gets off the ground with that unrebutted.
Mr. Hoover,
yes.
I mean, I understand you have this broad-based position, but it would really help me if we got down to something more nitty-gritty as to the different issues with specific claim limitations. Like, for example, why wouldn't it be obvious to put two syringes into Sollozzo's compartment 27? We know there's a second syringe. Sollozzo doesn't identify where it stores that second syringe, but it would seem to be plenty obvious to a skilled artisan that you would put it where the other syringe is already illustrated as being disclosed, that is, compartment 27.
Sollozzo has multiple compartments, Your Honor. It has two lubrication compartments. It has a lubricant packet. And, for example, one skilled in the art might consider placing the lubricant packet in the lubrication channel or lubrication well of Sollozzo, and if there were a syringe, it could be placed in there.
You're saying a syringe could be put in the lubrication well 31 or 33?
Yes. The board found that it was not obvious to do that with respect to claim 45 of the 088 patent. The board considered the expert testimony and considered the references in detail and made a factual finding.
Okay, the question is, why wouldn't it be obvious to place Sollozzo's second syringe in any existing compartment of Sollozzo?
I think that the claim requires more than just two syringes in a compartment.
I'm just talking about that particular limitation, though.
Pardon me, Your Honor?
I'm talking about just that limitation, the second syringe of Sollozzo. You have to put it somewhere, and any of the illustrated compartments in which a second syringe could fit would seem to me to be a very obvious place to locate Sollozzo's second syringe. Am I missing something?
Well, I guess the board found otherwise. I think the exercise today is on the standard of review. Was there evidence to support the board's finding that it was not obvious to do that? We have expert testimony to that effect, and given the expert testimony, which is substantial from really all the experts, but particularly Medline's experts, the board's decision should be sustained on that ground. I would point out further.
Can you tell me what expert said? Any of the experts said in the record that explains why it would be not obvious to put the second syringe in compartment 27.
Well,
a skilled artisan would not be motivated to locate it there.
On that point, I would refer you to the testimony of Mr. Plitschka and Dr. Yoon, who are Bard's experts, who refer to the general nature of the kit of Sollozzo. And both of them said, this is the patent, Mr. Plitschka, for example, this is the patent illustration that's teaching certain concepts. It's not a design drawing showing how something would be made if it was to be put into production. So we know that there's a syringe, the second syringe of Sollozzo, somewhere in the kit. It doesn't have to be in the tray. The kits have been made in the past with separate boxes, with separate components. And is it possible that it could be placed somewhere else? Could it be placed, for instance, on top of the wrapping of the kit? Could it be placed in a separate box, as in the Sterani reference, separate box from the catheter assembly, which is also a requirement of the claim 45. So there are other places where it can go besides in the compartment. And so the board found that it was not obvious, based on the references, to put them. You know, one of skill in the art would not be motivated to put it in a second compartment or in the same compartment as the other syringe or syringes in Sollozzo's case. And with the catheter assembly in a separate compartment.
Mr. Hoover, could you address claim one and in particular Mr. Matsui's arguments with respect to the first compartment support the base members support defining a mnemonic device?
Yes, Your Honor. Bard did not ask for any special construction of that term as the patent challenger. It was incumbent upon them to do so. We did point out, as you noted in our patent owner response, that the that is how we were construing the reference, that the it was basically the tray itself is supporting the syringes and defining the mnemonic device. And
at
that point,
in other words, you're saying that a device is simply the shape of the container.
I think it's the tray, Your Honor.
That, and that's a device?
I don't think that the other component
the word,
that Bard is making is correct.
The word mnemonic, in my understanding, means memory. And that sort of calls for the mental step of thinking that something at a higher level is to be used before an item of a lower level. That's a very strange claim.
Well, the claim does call for the tray to have the mnemonic device. There's nothing in the patent that suggests that if it was stuck on top of other stuff, for example, that it would be somehow a mnemonic device. In the evidence here is that Stilato does not, in fact, teach the syringes at any particular heights. The testimony of Dr. Plischka and Dr. Yoon is on very much on point on the syringe height of the illustration in Stilato. Mr. Plischka said we asked him, well, what are the two lines in the one drawing of Stilato? And he said, to tell the truth, I'm not 100% sure. We asked Dr. Yoon where the lubricant was positioned in Stilato. In Bard's brief, they refer to this as Dr. Yoon was testifying about the syringe, but he was actually testifying about the lubricant height. And he says, I don't know if that represents some type of ledge or not.
Mr. Hoover, you won, obviously, in the patent office, but then you start off your brief by saying the court should affirm for other reasons, that the references are incompatible with each other and that there were secondary considerations that the board didn't consider. Can you explain why you didn't start out defending what the board did and you had to look for other reasons to affirm?
Well, I guess I think there are such strong reasons for affirmance on multiple fronts, Your Honor, it was hard to choose, frankly. I feel that the Stilato reference describes a tray, and the reference teaches that urine and clots are to be dispensed into the tray, and the Stilato tray, therefore, you would not add a bag to it, and to me that is very compelling. I also find the secondary evidence here to be very strong. It's undisputed that Bard copied the Medline device. They praised it. They called it innovative. And so we thought that was evidence the court should hear. Nonetheless, on the factual findings, they are also very strong. On this issue of the height of the syringes, all four technical experts agree that the Stilato reference doesn't show that feature. And so on just the basis that the board did decide, that particular feature is not found in Stilato and it's not found in the other references either. I'd like to discuss, if I might, the lubricating jelly application chamber. We have evidence from our expert, Ms. Chiappetta, that the Stilato tray was not useful for lubrication, the recess 27. The compartment that Stilato shows is too deep, and she says if you put lubricant there, the purpose of the Stilato tray, again, is to dispense urine and clots.
Mr. Hoover?
And the catheterization.
Mr. Hoover, this is Judge Chen. When I look at compartment 27, there's this question of whether it's too deep so that you could lubricate the tip of a catheter. And I guess what I'm wondering is, why is it too deep? I mean, why can't you just, dip the catheter down into that compartment until the tip reaches where the jelly is. And like a French fry, with ketchup, you've dipped the tip of the catheter into the jelly.
Well, this is a medical procedure, and this is done in fairly high volume and in hospitals, in the emergency room setting, for example, where things are very stressful. And Ms. Chiappetta did opine that it was not really sized for that. Could somebody make it work? I guess probably so in your French fry analogy. But the use of the device is in the hospital-type setting, caregiver setting, and the compartment was deemed to be too deep. That's the evidence, among the evidence that Ms. Chiappetta presented.
I understand you have an expert that said that. I'm really trying to understand, why is it too deep? Why is it unusable? Is it something about the claim language itself that requires structurally a shallow well or compartment, as opposed to something a little deeper like compartment 27?
I don't think the Sollozzo compartment 27 with the wall that's shown would allow a user to reach one's hand in there to lubricate the catheter. And could you sort of shove the catheter down in there? That's not really conducive to how a medical procedure should be performed.
Well, how do we understand then your claim? I mean, to me, you know, if I could use compartment 27 as a ketchup well for my French fry, what is it about your claim term about a compartment configured to receive lubrication jelly to lubricate the catheter tip as somehow forcing me to understand that we're talking about a very shallow well? I guess is what I'm trying to understand. What is your conception of what that claim term means?
I think it means a place where lubricant is dispensed in the use of the kit. Ms. Chiappetta and Dr. Singh testified additionally that in the Sollozzo tray, Chiappetta said that in the
Sollozzo tray. Mr. Hoover, you keep referring to Sollozzo. Right now I'm asking you a different question, which is, what is your understanding of what the claim actually requires? Don't talk about Sollozzo. Put Sollozzo away. Let's just talk about what your claim means, and how a skilled artist should understand it as a structural matter. What is the structure of the compartment for receiving the lubrication jelly that requires it to be something that's not too deep?
I think it must be suitable for receiving lubricant when used in the catheterization procedure.
And what does suitable mean?
I think it, the user must be able to lubricate the catheter effectively in that compartment.
Okay, and can you just explain to me, one person to another, what is it about compartment 27 that makes a person unable to use that well as a place to lubricate a catheter tip?
As Ms. Chiappetta explained, that well is where urine and clots go in the Sollozzo device. When you catheterize a patient, you often need to measure the urine output. You need to evaluate the urine. You need to sometimes
Putting that to the side, I'm talking more about the structure of compartment 27 and how it is configured. As a structural matter, you're telling me it's not configured to receive jelly and to lubricate the catheter tip.
I refer, Your Honor, to, I believe it's the Gianelli case, where there were handles in the exercise machine and they're configured for pushing, and the prior art had handles, and they were configured for pulling in that particular machine, in that embodiment. So they're just handles. So you could say, well, any handles, you could push or pull them. But the court said, no, in the prior art, they were not configured for pushing, I think it was, because the machine was expressly designed for pulling, and you couldn't be used for pushing. I think this is the case on that front. Is it a plastic surface of a tray? Yes. Could lubricant be placed, you know, on the plastic surface of a tray as a general matter, of course. In Solazzo, is in a lubrication jelly application chamber? Absolutely not, for the reasons given by the experts. And in the same order as this Gianelli case with the handles. I think you have to look at the context of the reference and what the reference is teaching you to do, not simply at is there a plastic surface that lubricant would rest on. And that is how I would distinguish the Solazzo compartment 27. Would that be okay, Your Honor, if I move to the 596 and the drainage bag and the orientation thereof?
Sure.
Please proceed.
Yes, on the, again, we hear from Bard in its briefing and an argument today that there was a surprise claim construction. Again, that is also not correct. Bard, who is incumbent on Bard as the patent challenger under the board rules, to have presented any particular claim construction that it thought deviated from, I guess, the plain meaning of the terms. The evidence shows that the Sterani reference doesn't meet that claim limitation. It shows a catheter going around a bag and not on top of the bag, and it's not really positioned for the immediate use as it is in the Medline patent. And so I don't believe Bard is correct either as a legal matter or on the facts. The board found facts that the Sterani reference doesn't show that feature, and given that, that was the only reference that Bard relied on for that feature. Those claims are sustainable on that basis as well, independently of the two syringes. I'd like to talk, if I might, Your Honor, about the MI reference as well. We've heard a lot from Bard about the MI reference. I guess one point is that they didn't put the MI reference in the challenge grounds, but I understand it's in the record, so the court can consider it. But we do have evidence from our expert, Dr. Singh, that the MI reference is not relevant. And in the 109 IPR, the board expressly credited that reference, that declaration, and discounted the opinion of Bard's experts. That's happened quite a lot in these proceedings. But why is MI relevant? The board found that MI was not relevant because it talked about a completely different procedure. In another one of the proceedings, the board found that the MI reference was schematic in nature, wasn't really showing you a specific structure. Now, one of the points that Bard makes is that in the 36 IPR, I believe, that the board didn't discuss MI, so therefore there must be an error. Well, in the other 35 IPR decided the same day, and in the other IPRs decided on the same references, the board did discuss MI and did distinguish it and differentiate it. So the fact that they did not mention it in one of two IPR decisions decided on the same day is not a basis to reverse.
Could you talk about the various potential issue preclusion issues here? Let's assume for the moment we have to send some of these claims back to the board. The other side has made an argument that there's no need to consider any of the secondary consideration evidence. Moreover, there's no need to consider your arguments about motivation to combine Solazzo with a drainage bag because that's been there's issue preclusion there given an already final board proceeding, as well as replacing the lubrication tube with a lubrication syringe.
Certainly. I'll tackle them in that order. On the secondary considerations, as we've indicated in our brief, the board didn't make the nexus findings on essentially all of the secondary considerations that we presented. There are hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars of sales of these products. We put in evidence tying that to the claims. People buy the product because they really like it, not because of other reasons. We put in evidence of copying. We put in evidence of praise. Bard called the Medline product innovative. The board didn't reach that. The board didn't reach that in the other IPR for the 400 patent. They didn't explain why they didn't reach it. I think there's one issue that the board did decide against Medline, and only one on the secondary considerations, which was that Medline had not proved that the kit itself was the sole cause of the decline of Cauchy rates in the out. And I would say that that's an issue that we'd be precluded on. On the issue of the motivation to combine, we did, as the court has noted, lead with that. 11 days after we filed our brief, this court decided the Syncor case, which Bard helpfully cites in its brief. That case goes against us, and so we're going to drop that issue for this appeal. On the motivation to substitute a lubricant packet for a syringe in the Sollozzo reference, we didn't contest that below.
Mr. Hoover, I missed what the issue was again that you said you were dropping for this appeal.
I think that the we have argued that there, and the sole issue that we will drop for this appeal is the adding a bag to the Sollozzo reference. Bard has said that we are precluded because we didn't appeal the 400 patent, and so could somebody use the Sollozzo reference with a bag? We don't feel that that's a correct position for the reasons we stated, but the board held against us on that issue, and that issue was not a factor in any of the four IPRs that we are here on today. The board did not agree with us in any of those proceedings that it was, you know, adding a bag to Sollozzo was somehow a factor. What the board did do was find that other features of our claims were absent from all of the references. The board weighed evidence, decided credibility issues, agreed with Dr. Singh, agreed with Ms. Chiappetta, disagreed with Bard's experts on a number of occasions, discounted their testimony, and Bard's appeal today is predicated on asking the court to reweigh that evidence in large part. With that, Your Honor, I think I'm out of time. Unless the court has further questions, I would like to pass back to Bard's counsel.
I don't hear any further questions. Thank you, Mr. Hoover. Mr. Matsu, we have some rebuttal time.
Thank you, Your Honor. So I'd like to start with briefly with the two syringes in one compartment limitation. Our experts explained at Appendix 1395 that the two possibilities basically were compartment 3 or compartment 27. There was never any discussion that I'm aware of storing the syringe outside of the tray itself, and so you're dealing with a finite number of predictable places in which you could put that second syringe for Sollozzo. With respect to the drainage bag, it's very similar. You have a drainage bag positioned between the Foley catheter and the tray bottom. There really only are a couple places that you could put the catheter. You could either put it basically underneath the drainage bag. You could put it on top of the drainage bag. I suppose you could put it around the drainage bag. But in those last situations, you're going to have a situation where the drainage bag is positioned between the Foley catheter and the tray bottom. There's, again, just a finite number of predictable solutions in which a person of ordinary skill in the art could figure out where to position these various items within a tray. And then when you look at a prior art reference like Distin at Appendix 33, of the 596 appeal, where you have the bag that's flat on the tray bottom itself. It, given the fact that you basically want to have these trays so they're ready to use, so you can use them in the order in which the items are going to be used, the only logical place in which you would put the catheter is on top of the fluid receptacle bag. With respect to the lubricant compartments, the claim language here is just the first compartment is configured to receive lubricating jelly. There's nothing that would indicate any sort of shallow structure or any sort of any additional types of requirements. Again, these are apparatus claims. They're not method claims. So all that matters is that you have the structure. And with respect to Sollozzo's compartment 27, Nurse Chiappetta basically said at Appendix 10936, and this is in the 596 appeal, that she criticized Sollozzo's central compartment as relatively deep, but then her conclusion at the bottom was that clinicians are more likely to use an open flat space. So it's not that they're not going to be used, it's not configured to receive lubricating jelly, it's just that they're more likely to use a shallow container. So again, you have Sollozzo that meets the requirement, the broad requirement here, that it's just configured to receive lubricating jelly.
Mr. Matsui,
if in your view, what would you consider to be a chamber that would not be configured to accept lubrication for purposes of lubricating the tip of the catheter?
I'm not entirely certain what type of chamber wouldn't be configured to receive.
My problem is you seem to be saying basically anything would qualify to satisfy this limitation. If you can give me an example of something that you would agree would not qualify, I would be interested in hearing what it is.
I mean, one could imagine that there could be a container that could be shaped a certain way that would prevent the actual catheter to get into it. You were thinking about these trays fully in the context of them being dipped down with basically, compartments that go straight down, but one can imagine a tray that would have situations where the compartment goes off to a side in which you could not put the catheter actually to fit inside that compartment. But here we have a situation, I don't think the court needs to, address that type of hypothetical, because here we have a tray that clearly is configured to receive lubricating jelly.
Mr. Matsui, what if compartment 27 in Sollozzo was 12 inches deep? Would that be too deep?
I don't think it would, Your Honor, because catheters themselves, are very long. And so I think that at some point you could get to a situation where a catheter just would not be able to reach the bottom of a tray, but I don't think 12 inches might accomplish that.
And then finally, what do you have to say about what the board said, which was, well, the way Sollozzo is designed, compartment 27 has nothing to do with receiving jelly. That's where wells 31 and 33, that's where Sollozzo describes and discloses the place to squeeze out the lubrication jelly. And compartment 27 is all about the urine overflow and things like that. So that would probably be one of the very last places where you would squeeze out some lubrication jelly. Can you respond to that?
Yeah, I mean, our expert explained that clinicians would put lubricating jelly in lots of different compartments. And again, we're talking sort of more, the board's conclusion there is talking more about how the tray would actually be used by actual clinicians, not what the structures of the tray themselves are. And since these are apparatus claims, the mere fact that they have these structures is enough for the claims would have been obvious. And I understand my time has expired. If there are no further questions, we would ask that the court reverse the board.
Thank you, counsel. We appreciate the arguments of both counsel, and the case is submitted.